Thank you for being on your show. Even though I'm doing it here. This is funny for both of us, I feel like, because we've been talking about this for many years.
How many years?
I think we've tried to figure out 10.
I think yeah, 10. Yeah, around 10.
Let's just go with 10. It's an easy number.
Yeah.
Go with 10.
All right.
So you finally came to this point, but how exactly? And we'll get to your background in a second, but how do we get to this point right now, this moment?
I don't even know.
it's a wild thing. Should we start at the beginning then of your life?
Yeah, I think so. I think I want to tell people like a little bit about my background, like who I am, and you know, I'm 35 right now.
You're a baby.
Today, yeah. I'm a baby. I feel
Wait, today
I feel
pretty today old. Today
today today
today's your birthday.
No. But I'm 35. Originally from Venezuela, came to the States, you know, immigrant mother, you know, immigrant family at 7 years old in 95. And we came to Philadelphia, right outside of Philadelphia, and that's where I grew up, basically. And then learned English, like, pretty quickly. Like, it took about 5 to 6 months. So as a kid, it's so quick.
What? How'd you teach yourself English? Because I've heard different things from a lot of people who come over.
Yeah, I didn't teach myself. Like, I went, started in second grade, and my mom put me in school, and I didn't know a word of English. Like, nothing. And they took me to elementary school, and like a week before they were prepping me, my mom and my stepdad at the time. And, well, he wasn't my stepdad. He was my brother's dad, so we have two different dads. But he was, you know, kind of best friends with my mom and helped pave the way for us. And a week before I started school, they started teaching me one sentence. And they're like, if you know anything in English, you have to learn this one sentence and it'll get you through, right? And they're like, you have to learn how to say, I have to go to the bathroom.
That is...
So I kept saying that. I went to school and I kept saying that. And like, I went to the bathroom and like, it was a very white American school. Like, there were barely any Latinos there. I was, like, one of two, I think, at the time.
And, which is wild in Philadelphia, though. If you
think yeah, yeah. That. And I'd be in the bathroom, and, like, the teacher would be going crazy. Like, she'd be like, what does she want?
Okay.
So at one point, I had, like, 5 or 6 teachers in the bathroom being like, well, how can we help? And I'd be like, I have to go to the bathroom. And I'd be, like, stuck there. I was just stuck. And
because that's all you knew.
Yeah, that's all I knew, of course.
That's awesome,
though. Yeah, and from there, I just had an ESL teacher, like, take me under her wing. There was a program there, Miss Linda, and that's how I learned English.
So no TV shows, no nothing?
No, I mean, you know, I saw TV shows, like, at home after school, but basically being embedded in the school system and just having to speak it. And ESL, it's such an amazing program. It's what helped me, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good. So, you said you moved to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And you came over from Venezuela.
Yep.
A lot of your childhood, did you ever think that you would be venturing over? I mean, I know you're young. I know it's your child.
Yeah, you're a kid. I mean, I remember at 7. So, my brother and I have different dads, and
his... How old's your brother?
He's 2.5 years older than me, so he's either, I think, turning 38 this year. So his dad moved from Venezuela to Philly, so my brother used to travel to Philly all the time to see him because his dad used to work for an airline.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, so back in the day, he used to fly for free, like first class, like leather jacket.
Little kid.
Top gun stuff. So he used to go to the States, visit his dad, and come back. And I remember, like, he'd come back with Apple Jacks every time. That's awesome. And that's how he knew United States is Apple Jacks.
Apple Jacks over the States.
Yeah. And in Venezuela, I used to watch Baywatch.
Huh.
No, I was a lesbian back 7 years old.
I believe you said it to me before, we're all lesbians?
We are.
Yeah, okay. So you knew then, watching Baywatch.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, I had a hunch.
Who was your favorite?
A hunch. Pamela Anderson. Mm. I just remember her. I remember being in bed at 6 years old in my mom's bed because she had the TV. And I remember being there at 6 years old, not knowing any English, and I used to just watch the red bathing suits and Pamela Anderson slow motioning, running through the beach.
We all did.
I know. And I used to be like, I love the United States.
I mean, that's a great first impression is Pamela Anderson.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember being in high school when Baywatch came out. So it was like, you know, it's a campy show.
Right.
So I was like, eh, they're hot, though. It's, I mean, on a Saturday
they
afternoon.
They were good looking.
That's the whole point.
They're still good looking.
Even in their old age, they're still hot.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah. All right, so you knew you were a lesbian because of Baywatch. You moved here because of. You moved here because your brother's father, Philadelphia. Out of all places, I apologize.
Eagles fan. Eh. The best fan.
Eh.
Obviously.
Eh. We'll just leave it there. Just leave it there.
Yeah.
So from that point, you know, you get into high school, whatnot. What propelled you into your, like, adulthood? Like,
what propelled me?
Like, military?
I mean, so, yeah, I went into high school. I was, you know, an athlete throughout my whole life. Like,
What sport did you play?
Yes.
Softball.
Yeah. Softball, yeah.
You know, yeah.
So I played softball. I was never, like, a scholar. Like, I grew up, like, really hating school and... I just always thought that I was, like, way more advanced.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I just always
thought... On a different level.
On a different level than everybody else, right? And I couldn't explain that. So I remember going into high school, and I was a fresh... I mean, from 7th and 8th grade, I was being scouted for varsity.
No shit.
Like, yeah, I was pretty good at what I did. And thankfully, my brother... you know, made a name for himself as, like, the only Latino in the high school. So they knew, like, once I came into freshman year and I knew I was starting varsity ball, like, a bunch of my brother's friends were on the team with me as juniors and seniors.
That's what's up.
Right? So it was, he paved the way. So it was easy for me. I had an easy transition into high school. I was friends with, like, everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I treated, you know, back then there were kids that said they were gay and... Yeah. Hush, hush, right? Like, they weren't as open. Bullying was very much a thing, but I was always friends with, like, every single group. So going into high school, I played ball all of the time. I was, like, at a point, I had four teams, like, travel team. It's all I did. So a lot of my teachers, like...
That shit's crazy.
Not to call them out, but a lot of my teachers, like, passed me and stuff so I could keep playing.
I mean...
Because I hated school. I hated homework. I hated all of that stuff.
Your story sounds like my story, because I was the same. I fucking hated school and all that stuff. And I felt I was friends with everybody, you know, and...
Very social.
Everybody loved me. I was lucky because I actually lived next to my high school, like, directly.
Oh, nice.
Like, I was late for school every single day.
Me too.
I was so close.
I never went to school.
I skipped a lot.
The security guards loved me. They used to, like, open the doors for me and be like, go.
So, people at my high, we used to skip so much at my house because I had pool table and stuff as a kid.
Oh, I love pool.
They ended up putting a camera on my road to catch kids skipping. That's how much.
Because of you?
Oh, I had a pass. I was smart. I went to the AV class and was the assistant to the AV teacher. She had no class during the lunch period. Nice. So, for 3 hours, I just had a pass that I went in there. I went and got her lunch, came back, and she didn't give a shit what I did.
I love that.
That's awesome. So, anyway.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah, actually.
That's how I see it. Honestly.
That is how I started
and project
hustling.
Managing. Like, you're managing all these things high school.
It's fucking wild because I found tapes last couple times I was home of 16-year-old Marcus doing this.
See?
And, like, my friend was with me. She's like, oh, my God. You've always been doing this. You've been an idiot forever. No, but like
you're definitely
funny,
not an idiot.
But a funny idiot, like, you know, but that, I was playing, I've always played a role when I do that.
Right.
So that was always my thing. It was like, it was always like my stick to be funny, you know.
I mean, you're like a people, if you're a people's person, you're social, like it comes around.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why we get along so well.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, we first met, which we'll get to that, but we just clicked and, you know, and I can see why, because your backstory is similar to my backstory.
Yeah.
So now I can start seeing it. But now I think this is where it splits, where I went a complete opposite route than you went.
Yeah, you did.
So
yeah, I was, I went, I think it was like junior year, and the softball coach that was with me for, you know, a really long time, Keith Ford, I'll never forget him. He played like a father figure. Nice. He like, you know, my mom worked a couple jobs. Like, she couldn't make every game or every practice.
Well, so that's not to cut you off, but that's wild to me. Like, your mother being like this famous person in Venezuela coming over here.
Yeah, my mom, you know, we grew up with, you know, my mom was an actress in Venezuela and did a lot of films, a lot of theater, a lot of soap operas, and we grew up in the magazines, right? And when she chose to come over here, I think in her brain, she was 36, I believe, when she came over with two kids, she was like, I'll continue doing that, right? But when she came here, she realized, like, no, that's not how it is.
Cause she
didn't... I don't know the language. Like, I can't just start acting. So she started cleaning toilets, like a lot of
so
the...
So that's trash, though.
I mean, it's a lot of the immigrant families do, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have to start over.
You gotta start somewhere.
You gotta start somewhere, and that's what I admire about people that choose to leave a country and start over new and like do whatever
it takes. Dude, that's just ballsy.
Yeah, and she taught us, you know, like that, you know, no job is underneath us. Like, no matter what you are.
For real, your mom's dope. That's awesome.
No, for real. And like, I grew up that way. So like, whether you're a janitor, a waiter, cleaning houses, or a CEO, whatever, like, I treat everybody the same. I have the same respect.
Yeah.
You know, we all put, and I learned that as I'm going to get to it in the military, like, we always said, no matter what rank you are, we all put our pants on and our boots on the same way.
Right.
And that's how I view everybody. But anyway, so when I was about 16, they fired my coach. And when they fired my coach, because the senior players were getting benched over freshmen like me. So it was basically because of me that this happened. And I remember... when we were told, I threw my glove on the ground and in the gym. I'll never forget. And I was like, I'm finished with softball for the rest of my life.
Because this is a father figure of yours, and you fired him because of me.
Yeah, because, you know, it was. I felt like it wasn't justified. I felt like it was unfair. I feel like the better players
should be playing.
And the parents, you know, there was a lot of money
politics.
And that's why I hate politics, but we'll get to that on another episode. But that's when I quit softball. And I started really, like, I started going out. I started drinking, hanging out with older crowds. And just, you know, I've always liked to party, like, and go out and have a good time. I'm a people person. And I always felt more advanced. So I did, for the first time, fall in love with somebody older than me. And it was a woman. And going through all of that was really, like,
kind of,
why is this happening to me? Like, why am I this way? And it was it's been accepted in my family. I have a couple uncles that are gay. My brother's dad's gay. It's always been very, like, an open subject.
Right.
But when it happens to you, you're like, what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why am I not normal? And I went through that, and, like, her and I would cry together and be like, why do we feel this way? You're my friend, but you're not. I'm in love with you. Like, all these things, right? And then I'll never forget one day, after high school, I barely graduated because I missed, I think, like 70% of my senior year.
Sure.
Like, I was always just like school, I'm done.
Right.
Like, I was like, I'm moved on. Like,
especially if you're not playing the sport.
Yeah. I was like, I lost everything. You know, like, it wasn't for me anymore. And even the principal called my mom and myself, and she's like, hey, Natasha, like, is not coming to school. My mom's like, you know, she's, to her surprise, she didn't know. And I said to both of them, I was like, I feel like I'm finished.
Yeah.
Like, I want to just be done with this chapter in my life and move on. And also, I'm going through the struggle of, like, realizing I'm gay.
Your sexuality, who you are.
Exactly.
Like, your whole world's, like...
Everything.
It's just, like, an eight ball
shaking
up.
Yeah. It's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And then I had to take some exams and, like, do a couple of things that I missed. And until the day of graduation, I didn't know I was graduating. So I had to pick up my cap and gown the day of graduation, and I was the last one in the whole...
That's awesome.
How do you say it? Like, every row, you know, it's like alphabetically.
What is that? I don't know.
Whatever. I was all the way last. But hey, I graduated. And then...
You walked across, yeah.
Yeah, and then I was like, what am I going to do? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows what they want to do at 18.
You know, not to cut you off again, like,
yeah.
That's what I was thinking the other day, like... I was thinking, like, how to mentor, like, 20-year-olds. And I just want, because I work with a lot of young cooks now.
Right.
And I just want to be like, you know, if you don't want to be a cook, it's fine. Like, don't try to figure out what the fuck you want to be. Like, most people don't figure out until they're, like, 45, 35.
Yeah.
Like, just rock it. Do whatever you want to be happy. And then to be that age, I was thinking about how fucking lost I was. And here I am, a straight white male, in the world that's built for me. And I was like, well, fucking no.
The world that was built for
you. Yes, agreed. And I mean, yeah. I don't like it, but, you know, I'm just saying, you know, I know what my privilege was.
Yeah.
And even then, I was perplexed, like, what the fuck to do.
I just think there's so much pressure into figuring out what you want to do. Like, a lot of people, you know, that's why a lot of people are doing things that, and they're miserable.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, I always say, like, you should do what you're good at, not what you're passionate at. And if you do what you're passionate at and you're successful, it's like you're one in a million.
Right.
I mean, I think it's incredible. But, so I tried community college.
As we
and it was literally like 13th grade. So I saw like my whole high school there.
Yeah.
And I was like, this sucks.
I was stoned through my whole like 13th grade. I was just like, what the fuck am I here for?
I went to like one semester, maybe two, I think. Yeah. And I was like, and I remembered there was a recruiter from the Air Force that used to come to my high school. And one of my brother's good friends, Brad, he joined the Air Force. So he's the only connection that I had with the Air Force. And I remember this recruiter that came in, and I kind of like, you know, I saw him, I went up and talked to him, got like some pens and stuff like that. And it always interested me since I talked to him, since I saw the uniform, and I was like, that's pretty cool, right? So what had happened was my mom worked right next to the recruiter station.
Convenient.
Yeah. So I used to drop her off at work because I didn't have my own car at the time, and I used to take the car for the day. So what I did was, you know, I started researching a little bit, and I reached out to Brad, and he had already been to, like, I think to Iraq at the time. So I was like, hey, how is it? What do you think? And his feedback was awesome, but I'll never forget. He's like, if you join, you have to be prepared to deploy.
Right.
And I was like, okay. So I was like, yeah, like.
So what years were these?
This was, like, 2007. Like early 2007, damn, like January, February.
Yeah, so we were still in war.
I graduated in 06.
Damn.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like we were fresh into war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, been in there probably about 4 years at that point, 5 years.
Yep. Like so 4 years.
But we were there, what, 15 years? So you were still in the beginning.
We were there, until like yesterday. We're still there.
Yeah.
So I talked to him and I liked what I heard and I liked his feedback and I didn't even think about it. But at the same time, the woman I was in love with, and you know, your first love is your first love. Your first love is like you die for that person. Like, you don't think about anything else.
Can you say the name?
Yeah, I think everybody knows. She'll listen to this. Laura.
Hi, Laura.
Laura was her name. And so she, you know, something happened where she had to move away drastically to Florida. And from one day to the next,
Jesus.
Yeah, from one day to the next, basically, her family told me that, you know, she moved, and I was just left completely.
She didn't even tell you?
She couldn't at the time. But I was completely heartbroken and shattered, and I thought my world just ended, and I couldn't be around the same people, the same place. Everything reminded me of her.
My God, yeah, you're right.
Everything reminded me of her, and I was so young, and I was like, I got to get out of here.
My first heartbreak sucks.
Yeah. So, and it was a woman, right? It was so deep. It was so.
Because it's like deep. At the time, it's probably like a secret because you weren't really.
So we kept it a secret, yeah, for 2 years.
So that's like a dark, deep secret.
We used to like go on dates with men and bring men around just to hide it, and then we'd like meet up and cry. Like it was terrible. So she moved away. I found out. I was completely heartbroken. And then I dropped my mom off one day and I was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
And I went to the recruiter station and you walk in and like they have like the Army set up, the Marines set up, the Navy set up, and then the Air Force all the way in the back. And everybody tried getting me, like, hey, come to our office. And I was like, no, I want to go straight to the Air Force.
Right.
And I went straight to the back, and Sergeant Dracob, he was my recruiter. And I went straight up to him, and I was like, hey, like, you've been to my high school. And I talked to him about who I knew, and he's like, yeah. And I literally, like, that was, like, February, and I left in June. I signed papers.
Crazy.
And when I picked my mom up, I remember I was like, hey, mom, like, it wasn't that day. Like, I didn't tell her for a couple of weeks. And then one day I picked her up and I was like, hey, mom, like, I joined the Air Force and I signed the papers. And for me, it was really hard because she was a single mom and I didn't want to leave her.
Right.
Like, I felt like the obligation of being there for her, you know? But I wanted to choose myself first and be like, I got to do something to be able to help her and, like, provide. And because it's not cutting it. Like, community college is not going to do it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right? So I signed the papers, and it was really, really, really tough for her, for me, because we lived together. It was just us two. My brother was out, you know, in school.
That's
and everything.
That's crazy.
And then in June, I left, and that was super, super tough, and I went to boot camp.
Where was your boot camp?
Lackland in Texas, Lackland Air Force Base, yeah.
That's a shot for Philadelphia.
Yeah. God damn. Yeah, it was tough. And yeah, I mean, she fully supported me, and I think afterwards, like, when I started showing her, I got stationed in New Mexico, which I didn't even know where it was, honestly, yeah. Like, when they told me. I was like, Mexico? In New Mexico.
Cool.
And, yeah, she supported me, and then from that moment, I was able to, like, start helping out, and I was independent at 19. I mean, I turned 19 in March, and then I left in June, so, yeah, from 19, I've just been independent and stuff, so.
Now, for New Mexico, where else did you, like, travel to? Like, what was your, like, what places did you hit, and what was your favorite?
Like, travel or for work?
For
like
work, for the air, for station.
So, stationed, I was at Kirtland in New Mexico. From there, I went to Afghanistan. From there to South Korea. South Korea, here to Andrews, Maryland.
You still live right down the street from Andrews.
Yeah, and that's where I got out. I didn't move around as much as other people have. I was at my first base for like almost 5 years. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so in New Mexico was wonderful because I was, what, like 19 to like 23, something like that. And I went, I mean, everywhere, like Arizona, Colorado, Las Vegas,
yeah, everything's
like
right
California.
There.
Like, we used to hit everything on the weekends. Like, we used to be in uniform and be like, let's go to Vegas and not even go home and pack. We just drive and buy clothes and...
It's crazy.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah, I used to live in North Carolina, so I know Vietnam, so Fayetteville.
Yeah, yeah.
So I knew a lot of people from the 82nd Airborne. So
Fayetteville's from True Blood?
No, that's Louisiana. No,
what's the...
True Blood's
it. No, it's Fayetteville.
True Blood was outside of New Orleans. Lafayette. That was Lafayette.
Lafayette.
Wait, wasn't there a character named Lafayette?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, it was the gay black dude. He was my favorite character.
Yeah, he was good.
I like that show. I actually enjoyed that show, but like every show after season 5, it goes to shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why they do it. Just stop at season 5. Like, everything sucks after season 5.
Our show's gonna get better after season 5.
I mean, this is gonna keep going. But we're also not like a fiction. Like, this is a true story. So
it's true, though. It just loses its like oomph.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Like, I'm so burnt from Game of Thrones, because it took me...
I never watched it.
So, I was like you. I never wanted to watch it, and then when I went hit my head, I had all this free time, so I was like, well, fuck it, I might as well start watching it. And they fucked it up so bad after... So, the book ran out after season 5.
Oh, really?
So, the dudes were just making up shit as they went, and they just... Fuck it. So, what now, like, any new... Like, anything those guys touch, or any Game of Thrones shit, I'm like, I'm boycotting this. I'm not doing it.
I'll have to check it out.
It's not bad. It's a lot of killing. A lot of fucking death. Yeah.
I've never seen that. Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter. Like, none of that stuff.
Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, nearby. See,
I've only seen Twilight, and I loved it.
I've seen Twilight. I had girlfriend.
I wanted to be a vampire for, like, a year. I was like, I could totally
I think I dated a vampire one time.
Yeah. I was like, I could totally be a vampire.
Yeah. I mean, you stay out all night, so yeah.
No, but...
I'm joking.
I'm old now. Like, I'm 35, but I've lived a life where I feel like I'm, like, 75. Like,
so let's talk about that, then.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, the military brought me to Maryland. And in Maryland, you know, I got out in 2013. And after I got out, I joined the reserves and the guard. I did both. So I was at, like, Miami for a while, Delaware.
Where in Delaware?
I was at Newcastle.
Oh, that's not good. That's Philadelphia. Yeah.
But I got out, and 2 months later, I got my first panic attack, which was pretty severe.
Wow.
So it was really, really severe, actually. So from then, it took me about a year that I dealt with what I didn't know then was anxiety, panic disorder, all of the things.
Isn't that crazy? We're like, hello, this is what you have.
Yeah. I think, like, your brain goes on override for so many years, and, like, chemically, once your brain is on, like, fight mode, survival mode, after 30 days, like, you know, what's been told to me by therapists and by health professionals is, like, the chemistry in your brain shifts, and you're constantly feeling like you're in danger, right? So, like, when you feel like you're in danger for over 30 days, it changes you, and it takes a long time to get that back.
Because it sets into your system.
Yeah, so after that, I was pretty sick. You know, I was suicidal.
Oh, the brain will take a lot out of you.
Yeah. I got to a point where I was suicidal at one point where, like, I couldn't eat, I couldn't go to a restaurant, I couldn't go out, I couldn't work out, I couldn't do anything.
I would have never expected that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I actually kept it from my mom for a while, from everybody. But during that time, I met someone, because the only thing that I could relate, like, go to that made me feel better was drinking. Because drinking relaxed my mind.
Calmed the nerves.
Right? But the next day was hell.
Yeah.
So I'd be, like, at the ER, like, 4 to 5 times a week. Thinking I was, like, dying, and they do, like, an EKG every time and all this stuff, and they were the ones that were like, you know, you're suffering from anxiety attacks.
Right.
And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I always thought of anxiety attacks like, hey,
yeah,
get over it. Like, I used to have a friend that used to deal with it growing up, and I was like, you're faking it. Like, what are you doing?
I was to say, until I had one, I was like, oh, this is what this is.
Oh, yeah. But a panic attack, it's like doomsday.
I never had that, though.
Oh, man. It's like doomsday. You feel like your body's shutting down on you, and you're literally dying. And it can hit you, you know. I found later, like, what my triggers were and how to fix them. I had to take medication for a year. But during this time where it was at the worst, I met someone. Mm-hmm. I was in a pool league, and I met someone, and that was my ex-wife. And she actually helped me, like, literally, like, I feel like I owe her my life.
Right.
Yeah, I was to the point where I wanted to just, like, die. Because I couldn't live, you know what I mean? Like, I was just, I had to be drunk to, like, do anything.
Yeah.
Because if not, I was at the ER or, like, just crying in bed, like what is happening to me?
Like, if you're not sedated of some sort, you're in pain.
Yeah. And a lot of my, you know, veteran friends will relate, like, you know, we drink a lot. Like, I like drinking. I have a bottle of whiskey here because, one, I look at it as, like, I don't like pills. I don't like taking medication.
Yeah.
You know, but this is my medication. I don't do it often. Like, but if I do it, I enjoy it. I grew up in a household, you know, I'm Latina. Like, we grow up with, like, our family having a glass of wine, having a glass of whiskey, like, playing pool, like, having a cookout, like, being with family. But I like it. And it helps me relax my mind, because my mind has been through so much and my brain has been through so much that it relaxes me, you know. It's not who I am, but I enjoy it.
It slows things down for you.
It slows things down.
And we all know that. I mean, we all need that.
Yeah.
Know that. Like, we need it because, I mean, the world's going fast paced.
Yeah.
And sometimes, especially with social media and everything now, like, sometimes you just need to be like, fucking time out. Like, I need a break, man. Like, tap me out.
Yeah, it's true. We all need that.
So all right. So now we're up to the military. You're out. You're here in D.C. Now we know that's why you're here. Talked a little bit about your mental health and everything like that. So I guess we're almost about the time frame where you and I met.
Yeah.
Or we're right around that time frame.
Well, yeah, around that time, like, I didn't know anybody here. So I Googled, like, lesbian bars in D.C.,
so I could meet
people. Yeah, and there was one at the time, Phase 1.
God, I actually love Phase 1.
Yeah,
Phase 1 was fun.
So Phase 1 was, like, the oldest lesbian bar in the country.
Yeah.
Closed down, but that's where I met my ex-wife. That's where I played pool, where I met, like, some of my great friendships today, still till today. So, you know, that place meant a lot. For me, I went there alone, and I met one of my greatest friends today that, like, came up to me and was like, hey, are you here alone? And, you know, it just hit it off. Once that place closed, like, everybody felt lost.
Yeah, I had a couple of friends who went, and they were just like...
Yeah, they're like
a friend of my bartender,
where do we go?
A friend of my bartender, Jasmine. She bartended there.
Yeah, I remember Jasmine.
She was just... like, I don't know, dude.
Yeah, nobody knew where to go. Like, there was nothing else. So I was like, you know, I want to create a space that's like this, but with, like, you know, my kind of style.
Right.
Like, so that's when I was like, all right, I'm going to be a promoter and start, like, a party and see if anyone shows up. And that's when I started my first party. I think it was, like, August 2016 at Makedo on 8th Street Northeast.
Shout out to Makedo and Eric.
That party had, like, over, like, 100 girls.
That's,
like,
awesome. That's a great location.
Just, it was incredible. It was incredible. And, you know, from there, like, from Makedo, I went to, like, a couple places on 8th Street Northeast because I live there and I wanted to keep it Northeast. And then I found a place called Vendetta to have the party. It was once a month, and that's where I met you.
Yeah. And
so
It was a fun thing. It was a great party. You know, I would actually come upstairs, watch, and hang out because everybody was having fun.
You were the chef.
I was the I was the chef there, just be told. So I did the food and everything like that, and that's how, like, I would have to communicate with you.
Yeah.
And talk about, like, what would you like? What would you want to see here?
Yeah, like the menu and all that stuff.
So, but, like, those parties were fun, and you could tell people were having a good time. It was always packed.
It was awesome.
I don't think you ever had a slow night.
No, it was. I mean, that was, you know, I was in my 20s. I was very much like going out all of the time, and there was nothing else like it. Honestly, yeah,
there really wasn't.
Until like other promoters started doing the same thing, and then we all kind of like joined together for like a Halloween party or like a New Year's Eve party. But my party was, I mean, it was lit.
Yeah.
It was lit.
Now, is a lot of those people still doing parties?
Or
is
it no, just... none of them, actually. No, it's all new. It's like, I think I started back up, like I left it during COVID for a couple years, and then I just started to back up in August. But none of the same promoters are doing the parties. They all stopped.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I mean,
it's hard. It's hard.
That's a hard business to be in. I mean, I've been in the restaurant business for, God, it was 30 years now I think about it.
Yeah.
But it's a tough business, and, you know, I've run bars before, and I've run nightclubs before. So it's like, you know, you can have the perfect space, the perfect DJ,
mm-hmm.
and still nobody will show up.
Yeah.
And it breaks your heart.
But you know what the difference is like, it's hard to bring women out. Like, women don't go out as much as men. They don't spend as much as men.
Because men are looking for the women or the other men.
Exactly. And, like, women are like, you know, you meet somebody, like, you, like, watch Netflix or something, you stay home, like, you cook. You don't go out as much. And that's why lesbian bars fail. And it sucks. And that's why I want to, like, create more spaces and be like, you know, like, we don't have anywhere.
Well, you got to start somewhere. And it's like that whole, like, you know, if you build it, then come type thing. Like, and you got to create the culture.
Yeah.
Build the culture.
But it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's... And there's a lot of lesbians in this community here. So it's like...
I know.
Like,
but you know, I'm 35. I'm not with like the 22-year-olds anymore. So it's a different market. You know, my friends are in their 30s and 40s, and so it's just and most of them don't want to go out. You know, they want to stay home on a Sunday. They want to travel. They have families. They want to do a bunch of things. So it's just it's
brunch.
It's it's more of a challenge now. Like, I started a Sunday brunch in Arlington, and like,
where's the Sunday brunch at?
Darna Lounge in Arlington, yeah. But, like, trying to get people to come out, it's a struggle. It's not the same as it was 5 years ago, 6 years ago. People used to come out like that. Like, you used to be like, yo, I'm having this party, like, come out, meet me. And people used to be there in 30 seconds. They'd be like, yo, I'm there right now. I don't have any plans. But it's like, I have work. I have my spouse. I have my kids. I have my parents. I have, you know, responsibilities that are, you know, we view life different now than we did in our 20s. And it's just life.
So. I mean, I always said, your 30s, when anybody would ask me about when I hit the 30s, I'm like, the 30s are better than my 20s because it's all the same shit. I'm just smarter.
Like, and have more money.
have more money.
More flexibility, more freedom,
Like, I don't have to go out. Like, you lose that.
But back then, you're like, I don't care about anything.
Right,
I'll go out all the time.
I'm going. Because you always thought you were going to miss something.
And it gets worse, you know, like your 40s, your 50s, your 60s. I mean, I have some people coming out in their 60s, and that makes me so happy.
That is awesome.
That at least there's a place, you know. I've had people meet and get married and have kids from my event. Like, you know,
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Like just...
Are you invited?
Seeing... Am I what?
Are you invited?
No, that happened a long time ago. Yeah, I was invited. But you know, just making a connection.
Right.
Just seeing people make connections. I've had so many people come alone that, like, have nowhere to go.
That's awesome.
Just things like that just make my heart happy. So,
and that's a good reason for you to throw these parties.
Yeah. And I'm going to continue to do it until, you know, I physically can't anymore. Or, you know, I'm building a team right now, so I don't have to be there all of the time because it's nearly impossible. Right. But having people that like support the cause and believe in it and believe that we deserve a space and stuff like that is what's making it happen. So,
well, that's good. I mean, you know, knowing where I grew up, like, I love seeing everybody come together.
Yeah.
So, like, I love seeing, you know, the gay bars, the lesbian bars, the straight bars, and, like, being able to go to a lesbian bar at all.
Yeah.
You know, like, even a few years ago, there was, what, one left?
Yeah.
And now I think we got two.
Yeah.
So, numbers are going back up.
Yeah, we have two now.
So, numbers are going back up. And see, what I think your party's could create is someone who comes to that party and says, I want to do this all the time. I want to do exactly. this every night.
And I have people that come all the time. And they're like, I love it, you know.
But maybe you inspire the next wave of lesbian clubs.
For sure.
Or restaurants or bars.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. Because, you know, that's what we need. More culture.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So, you're going to keep doing this. You're going to keep helping everybody else out.
For sure.
And, you know, helping yourself as well. Because, yeah. I mean, when you're doing good for other people, it makes you feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's part of the reason why you and I have always connected, because we always wanted to see each other succeed, in a sense. And
other people. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And just build on these things. So I'm going to turn this around to your podcast.
Yeah.
Like, taking everything that I know of you and everything that I just learned about you.
Yeah.
What can you take from that experience of your whole life now, your 20s and your 30s, and, like, what can you give to the podcast?
Gosh. So, I mean, the podcast, you know, I never thought I'd do a podcast in my life.
Good Lord, I know this.
Like, ever. You know, because you pitched it to me, like, 10 years ago.
I've been trying for 10 years.
No, I'm good, I'm good. But, just, I don't like to be, like, in the center of things. I love production, and I love to be behind the scenes, right? And in my parties, I'm the same way. Like, I don't like to be on the mic. I don't like to be in the front.
You always
like,
stand in the back.
Yeah, I like to, like, stand behind and see everything that I've created come to fruition and, like, see people have a good time be happy. Yeah. That's what makes me,
keep going.
Not satisfied, but fulfilled. Like,
right, yeah.
It makes me feel that way. Like, I'm terrified of the microphone and all of that. So when the Netflix show came out, I was dreading it.
Well, let's step back a second. Let's talk about that Netflix show.
All right. Yeah, no, like, when it's... So, Tiff, you know, I knew Tiff from back in the day here from the parties. I actually met them at one of the... Not one of my parties, another party in D.C.
So they lived here? Did they...
Grew up in Maryland. Yeah, I forget where in Maryland, but in Maryland. So we, like, became friends over time, and... you know, I knew Tiff's ex, and we used to go out with my ex, and all four of us, like, used to hang out here and there. We knew of each other, and Tiff used to go to my events, so it was just, you know, more of, like...
So you guys were,
like, friends. Like, yeah. Not best friends, but not... Good you friends. Know, we knew of each other, and we hung out, and we've been on trips, and, you know...
I mean, if you go on trips with somebody...
Yeah, like, I mean, we became, you know, we became semi-close at some points, but, you know, Tiff went... through a hard breakup and decided to move to Cali, and I fully supported it. I was like, go have a good time. Go create a life there. I mean, I admire people that move from one place to another.
It's hard.
Like, without a job, without anything, and just start over. I mean, it's incredible. It's admirable. So one day, Tiff called me, and they were like, hey, I got casted for a show. And I was like, what show? And I'm like a reality show like nerd, like that's like where my brain decompresses.
It's the same thing with like drinking. Like, you want to like step
from
out.
My full time job. Yeah, like I just watch trash TV and I feel like I feel good. So I was like, "What show?" And Tiff was like, "The Ultimatum." It's a queer edition. And I was like, "That's gonna be big."
Did you see the original one or?
Oh my god, I watch every show. Like, I watch Love Is Blind, The Bachelor, huge Bachelor fan, all this stuff. Like, for years and years and years.
So you're sappy into that.
Like, yeah, but I was like, wait, like, what? I was like, and I didn't believe it at first. So I'm like, yeah, like they can call me, you know, like the producer can call me. Like,
so you had no idea what you were stepping into.
Hell no. I was like, yeah. I'll show up. I'll do a little. I'll do a little, like, you know, I'll film a little bit, and then, like, I'm done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they called me.
How'd that go for you?
We're here right now because of it. So they called me. I went out, like, twice, filmed, and, you know, it's what you saw on the show. And from the show, it obviously, like, resonated with a lot of people, I guess, what I said and how I was, which was surprisingly so not, like...
You were funny as fuck.
Yeah, like, I was just being me, and I felt so... just pleasantly surprised, right? Like, I always think that people are so shitty because people are. Like, we can be so shitty. Yeah. That's why I love dogs and animals, you know? Like, I just... So, when all of that came out, I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, so many people were saying so many positive and nice things that it was crazy. Yeah, so that's...
It's gonna be so overwhelming to go from, like... You know, besides, like, the numbers that we will talk about, but, like... just all the nice shit being said about you. It's gonna be.
It was
fucking
crazy.
Wild, like mind blowing.
And I was in Europe with my family, and at the time, I mean, we went to bed like not thinking anything of it, and I had mentioned it to my mom, and the next day it was crazy. I think I woke up to like 7,000 some messages.
So
women all over the world.
Yes.
This is crazy.
So, all right, I want you to walk me through this. So you went to bed, you're like, yeah, fuck it, nothing's gonna happen. I'm just bad.
Yeah.
I'm only on the show for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You wake up. Like, what's the first thing to like, oh, I got messages. Like, what, walk me through this process.
I think it was my mom at the time. Like, I think we were doing something, or like, we went to breakfast.
So you were again, just.
No, yeah, like, I wasn't even paying attention. Like, and I think my mom was like, Natasha, like, look at your phone. Like, and that's how I was like, what? And I just started, and I mean, the whole trip turned into, you know, everyone's phones and just seeing, like, what was happening. And I felt like kind of guilty because I was like, you know, taken away from like my family's vacation. And, you know, so I felt like a lot of guilt during that trip because of it, because I felt like I couldn't fully enjoy it because I was worried about them and not being fully invested in what was happening. So I like put it off a little bit, but it was crazy. It was crazy. It changed my life, you know, for a moment, forever, I don't know. But that's what brought me to want to do the podcast, and it brought me a platform that, you know, I want to like be able to highlight people in the community that like make an impact and have a story. I think everybody has a story, and I think that it's a beautiful thing, and these stories need to be told. Yeah. And whether one person listens to this or a million, like, it's gonna impact one person, and that's why I want to do it. So
I'm
excited.
You should be. Yeah. I'm excited myself. Like I said, I've been waiting 10 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't care how the hell we got here. I'm just happy we got here.
We're gonna keep going.
Yeah. So all right, so all that happened. It gives you inspiration to do this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, you said, I don't care if one person or a million people. So, like, besides that, what do you see, like, moving forward? I know you want to interview people here and there, but you also want to interview, like, some of your fans, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I want to start, you know, with people that I know and people that I don't know that have reached out to me. But I think that I've even talked to some fans that, like, have reached out to me that have told me about their stories, and it just touches my heart. Like, I want to bring people that I can in person, other people that I can't in person remotely, but there are no limits.
I want to thank you for talking to me, because, like I said, you know, I knew kind of your story, but to hear, you know, just talking to you, I love talking to you anyway, so, like, just, you know, getting to know you a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, and I look forward to the podcast because I know I'm going to hear some stories that you've never told me before. I'm going to hear some funny shit, and I'm super excited for it. So I'm going to pass this back to you if you have any final words.
Yeah, no, honestly, I just all I can think of is just I want to thank everybody for their support, you know, their love, their desire for my happiness, which will come soon, like, that I found because of the show. And I couldn't be more thankful and happy at this moment. And I just hope that people tune in and can resonate or relate or take something from each episode, because everybody that I choose on this podcast, that's going to be on the podcast, has such a great story to tell. And, like, I honestly think it's going to be something that can impact at least one person. And if it does that, like, I feel like my job's done. So I just want to thank everybody, and I'm so excited for this.
Cool.
So thanks for doing this with me.
Thank
for
you.
Real.
Yeah, dude. I'm here.
No, seriously.
I'm here.
Like,
cheers. Let's do that.
Cheers.
It's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Guys, tune in. Check it out.